Today on the Traffic Club of Chicago podcast series, we're going to be speaking with Randy Lewis, supply chain industry executive and advocate for those with disabilities. As senior vice president of supply chain and logistics at Walgreens, Randy bet his career and created a inclusive workplace for one of the biggest corporations in America. So with that, we're going to start in, and my name is Sordo, and like I said, I'll be interviewing Randy Lewis today. So Randy, thank you for joining us, and a few questions to start, but if maybe you could give us a little bit about your background and why you decided to be an advocate for those with disabilities.
Well, in my professional role, I was at Walgreens. I was vice president. I was senior vice president, chief supply chain officer, in charge of about 20 distribution centers and a large private fleet, getting the merchandise from our suppliers to our stores. And I had that job. I started that job in 1995, and I was able to hold it for 16 years. So I got to see a lot of things during that time. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, probably pretty close to that time, my son was diagnosed with autism. So I had two challenges in my life. This job that was challenging, fantastic. We were a growing company. All the things that you would want in a job. Great team, great future, great challenges, interesting work. But the other side of the life, the family side, we had two daughters and a son. And when our son was three, he was diagnosed with autism. So probably about the time I came to Walgreens, 92, he was probably about two or three, just been diagnosed. And that kind of puts a cramp on your what you might have planned for the rest of your life. And I had I'd never had any exposure to children with disabilities, and certainly not autism. It was something we knew about and something that we feared, but we didn't have any experience. And one of the first things that you go through is kind of the death of your child. Not the literal death, but the death that you have dreamed. You know, when you have a child, you think, well, they're going to do this, and I'll have baseball games, and we'll have campouts, and we'll do this, and they'll grow up and have a family and all those things. Well, those kind of just went awry from day one. So you're trying to figure out what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And surprisingly, one of the first things you think about is a job, because you're wondering, you know, with typically able kids, they're going to go to school, they're going to get a job and fit right in. Mm-hmm. That's something that's not a given for a child with a disability. So that weighed heavily on me. And I've probably thought about that about every 10 seconds for mm-hmm. a few years, and it became once every couple of minutes and every 5 minutes. Now it's probably only about three times a day. But all through that time, we were hiring a lot of people, and I thought, this would be a great place to, why don't we hire people with disabilities?
Sure.
So we did that. And what it really made me realize is thinking about all those people in our stores. You know, retail is a tough business. Mm-hmm. It doesn't pay that well. And we had most of our 200 and something thousand employees work in the stores, and I was thinking about them, and I'd be laying in bed at night looking at the ceiling and thinking, gee whiz, disabilities plays no favorites. They've got to be people out there throughout our company who are laying in their beds at night wondering what's going to happen when they're gone, or what's going to happen when the child becomes an adult. And just from those ideas that we were growing, and oh, by the way, and my son had surprised me all along the way and what he could do, I underestimated him over and over. So we said, let's hire, let's do something different. We were building new buildings, so we began a hiring initiative, and it turned out to be about 1,000 people that we had hired within 5 years, earning the same pay, making the same wage, held to the same standards. Mm-hmm. And now that number is probably close to 2,000, almost 20% of our entire logistics workforce. You're the one that asked the provocative question.
No, that's great. I really appreciate you diving in there. For me, I guess one of the first things that I think about with that is, you know, did you get a lot of fight back from internal stakeholders? I know that a lot of us, you know, we've tried to bring new procedures and policies and process to the company and help the business, but you know, people don't like change. So how did that go for you? And what were some of the internal fights that you had?
Well, you know, a common question is, how did we get everybody's buy-in?
Mm-hmm.
I think underneath, everybody wanted this to be a success. I don't think there was a single person who did not want it to be successful. And it's rightfully so that even the board, they wanted it to be successful. So generally the biggest question had people ask is, what happens if it's not? And I remember when we presented it to the board, we gave them the numbers. We said it's going to be our most productive center that we'd ever built. We're going to hire a large number of people with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, what if it doesn't work? And we said, well, we try lots of things that don't work. If it doesn't work, we'll adjust.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, okay. And it worked out to be the only thing they said since then was, thank you.
Wow.
And in the stores, the people in the stores, you know, I can confess now, all the problems that you see in the store with an out, if you walk into a Walgreens store, which probably is what makes customers, frustrates them the most, is come look for something, it's not there. That was really my fault. Mm-hmm. And I got invited to speak to all our store managers in Las Vegas, mm-hmm. 5,000 of them, to
wow.
tell them about this new center we were going to build.
Sure.
And the disability initiative. So I went there, and it's not a very welcoming audience for somebody who's the cause of all their problems. So
right.
It was some trepidation. I took the stage in Las Vegas in this room, darkened room, surrounded by 5,000 store managers.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them the story. I told them about the center we were building and how good it was going to be and how it was going to make their lives easier and all those things. And they weren't interested at all. I could only see about three rows into the audience. And
right.
those people were on their Blackberries at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But when I told them that we were going to hire a bunch of people with disabilities, be one third of the workforce,
mm-hmm.
And telling them it's something that had never been done, the room got quiet.
Wow.
And those people that were looked up from their Blackberries, and they literally leaned in to hear the rest of the story. And
wow.
at the end of telling them this, I didn't plan on it, but I thought, well, let's raise the house lights.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked people, I said, if you have someone in your family with a disability, or you know someone, or you hold someone in your heart with a disability,
mm-hmm.
just stand up. Please stand up. Not knowing
sure.
what would happen. And as I looked around the room, people started standing up. In the end, about 1,000 people were standing. And the story no longer was my story.
Mm-hmm.
It was our story. And from
wow.
that moment on, there wasn't anything that would stop this.
Wow.
It was our story then, and that all we did had to do was just not screw it up, so to speak. And we didn't.
Yeah.
But there, well, but at the time, you know, I was getting emails from all over the country, people who were
mm-hmm.
saying, I want to work. If I can help on this project, I would.
Sure.
And there wasn't a stadium in America that would hold all the people who wanted to work on this project.
Mm-hmm.
All we had to do was give them permission, and that's what mostly it took.
Right. Well, so, yeah, at the beginning there, you talked about adapting and having to adapt for the program. So I'm wondering, so how did you modify the distribution centers to adapt for this new initiative? Or, you know, you just spoke about the managers. So how did the managers have to adapt their styles for this initiative? for the people?
Well, on adapting the center, we didn't. It was going to build a new center. It was going to be a new center with new technology.
Uh-huh.
The DC was going to be brandly new design. We were going to have to redesign the automation anyway.
Okay.
And we didn't know about disabilities. And one of the things, if we were going to do this, we had to remember that we had shareholders that are challenged. You know, we have all the challenges of the business. So we were not going to spend anything extra to do it. So all we did on the design, we weren't disability experts, but we thought as we were redesigning something, what can we do to make it easier for people who may be short or tall or may have difficulty standing or may have difficulty reading? Maybe instead of our screens with all the words on it, we took a lesson from fast food and used pictures and used touch screens, things like that on the physical side. On the manager side, because this was going to be a new building, what we did from the start was look for a manager who was very good, who was people focused, but also very results focused, and pick the right leader. And he happened to be a he. He was very excited about the challenge of it. He had no experience with people with disabilities either, but he was a great leader.
Mm-hmm.
And he would meet. And we told all the managers, when we hired all the managers and transferred, we told them that this is the first time this has ever been done anywhere.
Right.
And that it was not going to be a program of the month, that we were going to do 1/3 of the entire workforce. And they were excited about it, but they were kind of worried too, what if it didn't work? And I think having the right leader in place that believed in it, and he would... He'd pass his hat around in some meetings. They'd meet at the end of each day when we were starting up, and people would put their questions in there, because they didn't want to feel like they'd be embarrassed to have say their questions, so he put them in a hat and drew them out and answered them, kind of one by one.
Right.
And sometimes he would say, "I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I guess we'll have to wait to see if it comes up."
Mm-hmm.
And most of the problems that our people anticipated did not come up. Just like me worrying about my son getting kidnapped or my son falling down in a well or all the not learning how to read or never speaking or all the things. Most of the things we worry about are things that don't happen. Things that do happen, we didn't think about.
Sure. Goes with the... I guess adapting to what you find out you didn't really know or have to worry about.
That adapting, and this is the interesting thing, that adapting made that group of managers our best group of managers we'd ever had. And that's something we've observed in our other buildings. Working with people with disabilities made us better in all facets of our operation.
Right. Actually, that brings up a point I remember you spoke about a while back when I heard you, is you talked about KPIs and measures of success and how you measured everything throughout the whole initiative, as you were proving it to different people, how well it was working. And one thing you mentioned was safety and how safety went got much better as a result of the program. So maybe could you elaborate on that and tell us how you figured out that was and maybe some of the other measurements that you didn't realize early on?
Well, one of the things when we did this and presented it to the board, we said we're not going to give up anything on productivity and efficiency and all our business objectives, safety, productivity, quality. Yep. So we went in knowing that we were going to measure all these things and so we could make sure that we were that our goals aligned with mission and we were able to achieve it. We found out that people with disabilities perform the same. So productivity was the same. Quality was the same. Retention was better. It was almost twice as much retention. Now that may not be surprising because you think people with disabilities, we probably don't have a lot of other opportunities for jobs. So that kind of made sense.
Right.
So we didn't have the turnover, retention, absenteeism. was less with people with disabilities. We would have a, like when our Ohio building had the Ohio Turnpike closed down, our people with disabilities there called in and said they were going to walk to work. We had one time when they rented a hotel room next to the distribution center so they could walk in the next day. We don't have a lot of typically able people doing that, but that kind of surprises. And safety was the real surprise, because if I talk to people about doing this, one of the first objections I will hear say, "Oh yeah, but we have lots of hazards and we have lots of issues, and safety is a concern. What if they stick their hand in the machine, or what if they walk out in front of a forklift, or what if they, you know, all the things we conjure up in our minds." Mm-hmm. Well, we found out that people with disabilities work safer, have fewer accidents, and have less severe accidents and less days off than people without disabilities. And we kind of thought about, why is that? And we discovered a very important secret. People with disabilities follow the rules. It's as simple as that. And if, another thing we noticed, we have lots of incidents reported by people with disabilities, but they're not serious. For instance, we will tell somebody, "Oh, by the way, if you get nicked, you know, or scratched anywhere, let us know." Well, mm-hmm. typically able people, you know, they just blow that off and don't. So that what we found out, people with disabilities, they would tell us, we put a Band-Aid on it, we'd fix it. So all mm-hmm. the little hazards, we cleaned up a ton of little hazards, because they would report things that other people would say, "That's too minor."
Oh, that's great. Yeah, so I guess for me, another point that you'd brought up previously with us was about, you know, once your program was successful, you had all these other competitors in the industry or other companies that wanted to learn what you were doing, because from what I remember seeing, you were all over the place. You know, the media was covering this like crazy. So could you tell us what you did about that? Because I remember you saying you brought other companies and competitors into your warehouses and distribution centers and showed them what you were doing, which I thought was pretty impressive.
Certainly. When we did this, we used to never let anybody in our facilities. And it was because either we thought we were so good and we didn't want our competitors to know, or that we were so bad we didn't want our competitors to know. So it was one of those two. But we would never let any competitors in. But when we did this, we made the announcement that we are going to invite other companies to come in and see for themselves. And we were even going to conduct boot camps, two-week boot camps if they wanted. They could send their managers there and we would teach them everything we knew about it, let them see for themselves. And I think that gave it a lot of power. I mean, I think with that gave people the idea that we're doing something. This is not just about being a good competitor. This is doing something better. This is beyond just, you know, being a competitor and success in that arena. And a lot of companies came. They would, some would come for a day, some would come for a week. And I think by seeing it, that's what opened our eyes, because it's too hard to imagine how can you run a new building, or, and now it's spread through all our centers. So all of our centers now, I think there's 17 distribution centers now. So it works in buildings that are not automated, highly automated in large numbers, but they get to see it for themselves. And typically now we do a tour. A one-day tour. People will come in and say, "Come bring your senior management, operating management in." Mm-hmm. HR is going to be important, but it's got to be the operations, because they're on the hook for the results of the operations. So bring operations people in and let them bring their hard questions. Mm-hmm. And we conduct a tour. It lasts about through the morning. They go out in the building, and they typically, the first question they ask after a little bit is, "Where are all the people with disabilities?"
Right.
Because all they see is people working. And we have to say, "You're surrounded by them." You know, And you, if you walk to some people, you can tell by talking to them or watch. If you see them walk, you might notice something, but no, you're surrounded by them. And sometimes we let them even work with one of them. And then they realize that they can't do the job near as well as the person with the disability.
Right.
So you get to see that aspect. And then we take them in and have a meet with management, the management team, frontline management. Right. And have them ask, we call it the Las Vegas room. Bring your questions, ask the questions that you wouldn't want to ask anywhere else. And what stays here, stays here. And they ask, what's it like to manage here? What's a good day like? What's been a problem you've had? How has it changed you? What's different? Any question anybody wants to ask. Mm-hmm. And, a lot of companies have come. I suspect that we've probably had, probably over 250, 300 tours in the last 10 years. And we probably had 50 companies or 60 or 70 companies start their own initiatives. Big companies, too.
Wow. I know that we're getting short on time. I just, there's a couple other things that I wanted to ask you that I thought about right away was, you know, everybody's talking about technology and automation these days, and especially in the centers. How is that going to affect your initiative and in your program there? And, you know, obviously throughout a lot of things are going automated and, you know, maybe job cuts here and there, but what do you see happening to the initiative?
Oh, I think it's still going to be regardless. Total number of people may go down. Mm-hmm. But I think the goal has been 20% of the entire workforce, no matter how big or small it is.
Gotcha.
Just because it's, having a disability doesn't mean, doesn't make a difference, because the performance of the people is the same. And, and they have a positive impact on culture. They bring more meaning to the workplace and reminds people, gee whiz, I have to be considerate of each other. I have to be specific on my explanations and all those kind of things that make us better and make for a better teamwork and everything else. So only will impact is the total numbers. It won't affect the percentage.
Yeah. If I can remember correctly, I think that you mentioned that, you know, as you were starting, and this might have been a, you know, adaption you made to the program, as you were starting, you know, you noticed that only certain jobs were people with disabilities. And then as you got into the program and really dug deep, you made sure that every job had, you know, the initiative working through it. Is that correct?
That's correct. When we started,
okay,
we hired for all positions, but we brought in large numbers in our group and anticipating where we had large numbers of people. In our case, it'd be split case picking, you know, left brake pack picking, receiving, decant. Those are very labor intensive. And we initially had lots of numbers in those. But what we discovered, we have people working in all the functions. We have a deaf customer service rep who deals with stores, and we hired her in local management, hired her, not because she was deaf and would, you know, changed everybody's paradigms. They hired her because they thought she was the best candidate.
Sure.
And she was a huge success. We have one of the best HR people who has CP. We wouldn't have hired her had we not been looking, because we would have worried, could she get out of the building quick enough? She has what she calls her sexy walk. Could she get out of the building fast enough? And she has her sexy talk. And people understand her. And of course they understand her, because she has something to say when she speaks.
Right.
But it took a life of its own and opened up possibilities that I never imagined possible. And so we learned a lot during the experience. And everybody else, other companies done it. They've never gone back. They've all gotten bigger. I talked to UPS, or I talked to Toyota, or I talked to Best Buy. You know, the other companies that have done it, they're going bigger.
Wow.
Sephora is in a process of a huge rollout across all of its DCs across the United States too. Mm-hmm. And they're finding the same things we did. Great worker, that make a difference in the culture, make them better.
Mm-hmm. That's, yeah, it's amazing. And like I said, when I heard you speak the first time, and then I read your book, No Greatness Without Goodness, it puts you in a different world and gets you motivated to kind of do something yourself. But I know we're getting short on time. So I do want to thank you for your time today, Randy. And also, could you tell our audience where they might be able to purchase your book or follow you to hear more about it?
The book, No Greatness Without Goodness, they can find that at Amazon, mm-hmm. in paperback or in hardback. And if they want to find out more about the program, they just go to nogwog.org. N-O-G-W-O-G. It kind of shorthand for No Greatness Without Goodness. Nogwog. When we were writing the book and talking about it, that's a lot of words to remember. So that's how we came up with the website, nogwog.org.
Well, that's great. Well, yeah, thank you so much for your time today, Randy. It was great to speak with you again, and I do recommend the book to anybody out there listening. So we'll have a link posted on the Traffic Club of Chicago website as well, so you can go out and buy that on Amazon. But thank you for your time, and this is a great conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Justin.